I'm Anthony Walsh, and this is the Roadman Podcast, the show where we empower you with the tools to optimize your health, your happiness, and your longevity. You know, when I started this podcast, I thought it was a tool of expression, of telling you what I thought, of imparting upon you my values. But as we approach 1,000 episodes, and it's taken me 1,000 episodes to realize this, it's not a tool of expression, it's a tool of discovery. And today's guest, James Herrera, opened my eyes to another application for cycling. He's a former US Army veteran, and he's using cycling for therapeutic effect to treat post-traumatic stress disorder from combat veterans. This is a fascinating application of cycling and its intersection with mental health. I think you're going to love this episode. It opened my eyes in ways I never thought about cycling, and a relationship which I thought couldn't get any deeper with the sport was deepened once again. Here's a little taste of what awaits you today.
During conflict time, you're having to be on alert 24/7. You know, you could be 15 minutes into getting a nap, and then all of a sudden it's time to go again. And so your body clock just recalibrates itself. You know, I was a professional coach for a long time. And so when my athletes, my Olympic athletes would retire, you know, you're talking about folks who were between 25 and 30 years of age, did their last professional race. And they immediately went into a huge sense of loss and depression. You know, taking off that uniform for the last time, it's like, well, what do I do now? Drops me off at the airport, and as we're about 10 minutes from the airport, he says, hey, I want to thank you. Wounded Warrior Project saved my life. And he starts telling me a story. He was actually sitting in his car under the interstate, had written goodbye letters, and had a pistol in his passenger seat.
Hey Roadman, today's episode is brought to you by our amazing clothing sponsor, Lacoste. I bounced around cycling clothing brands for the better part of a decade until I found Lacoste, and then I settled. The moment I put that kit on, I knew I was stuck. Founded by former Team GB cyclist Yanto Barker, Lacoste isn't just another cycling brand. It's an apparel brand born out of professional cycling's heart and soul. I had Yanto on the podcast, and his mission, it shone bright in that conversation for me. He wants to create the ultimate cycling gear, and he's doing this by combining pro-level insights with the kind of technical details that make all the difference. So whether you're racing, you're training, or you're just enjoying the ride, it's an amazing piece of kit. Every piece of Lacoste kit, it's tested to the limit, ensuring it stands up to the toughest rides. What really sets Lacoste apart for me is how they've taken the feedback from the World Tour teams they've sponsored, working with top aerodynamicists, and they've incorporated that into all their kit. So whether you're pushing to beat your own personal best or you're just out enjoying the open road, Lacoste's mission is help you get the most out of every single ride. Trust me, feeling good on the bike means performing well. And with Lacoste, you're always in good hands. We've teamed up with Lacoste to give you an amazing discount. If you head on over to lacoste.cc and use the code ROADMAN20 at checkout, you're going to get 20% off your Lacoste order. James, welcome to the Roadman Cycling Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm a huge fan, Anthony.
How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. It's cold weather out in Colorado, USA today, but got a good trail running with my dogs this morning. So yeah, things have been good.
Life is good. I'm really excited to chat about the Army, because it's a culture of service that at least my generation here in Ireland, we don't have. We don't have that same relationship with the military, and you know, we don't have the same associated problems you guys have with, you know, lack of aftercare for people that exit the military. And I know you're doing amazing work in that area, which I want to get on to and talk to later on. But before we do, paint me a little bit of a picture of what it's like in active service.
Yeah, you know, I joined the Army in 1988. My service time was, I'd say, a little bit different than some of our more modern service members. And I think it really just depends on the era that the individual enters service. So 1988, I got out of high school, went to college for a couple of years, thought that I would make a go at higher education, and I decided I needed some discipline in my life. So I enlisted in the Army. And like you said, you know, it is very much a culture of service, but it immediately instills a sense of physicality and discipline. You know, a lot of running, a lot of push-ups, a lot of sit-ups, a lot of rucksacks. And so a lot of physical energy, but wearing that uniform and knowing that you're part of something that's greater than yourself, being part of a team, surrounded by your brothers and sisters, I mean, it's pretty phenomenal. So for me, I truly enjoyed my time. I did one enlistment, but it really just instilled a sense of pride in me that I had done something, you know, that I felt like was for my country. My father and my uncles and my grandfather all served in different branches of service, different wartime, World War II and Vietnam. And I, you know, for good or bad, my service time did not include a deployment to any place scary. And so, you know, I think about our more modern service members. I mean, they, after the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan and things of that nature, have had to deal with some very different, you know, after service time stressors.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I've spoken to multiple servicemen, including some special forces guys on the podcast. Nobody ever seems to regret service. And I wonder, are we missing a trick in this part of the world? Everyone seems so proud of their time in their service, but they also built a set of skills that they carry with them for the rest of their lives.
You know, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think there is that sense of national pride, you know, duty, honor, courage, commitment, and also resiliency. You know, I think that wearing that uniform, it just does something different for an individual's confidence and self-esteem, you know, being part of something greater than yourself, like I mentioned. You know, I don't know that it's hard to say if people are missing out. You know, I think everybody, you know, follows a path and does something that is very meaningful to them. We meet a lot of civilians that support Wounded Warrior Project, that support our wounded, ill, and injured service members, and they're phenomenal individuals. I work with both veterans and civilians at Wounded Warrior Project, and they're amazing human beings, you know, that all have the mission of honoring and empowering our service members at their core.
We're quite far removed from the notion of war. We live in this quite safe little bubble in the Western world. And I think a lot of us have forgotten that the very things we take for granted, freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of employment, they're underpinned by a threat of violence. We ultimately have a guy with a big stick, or as Jack Nicholson says in A Few Good Men, there's a brilliant scene at the end, you know, where he's like, he's berating Tom Cruise for saying, you're standing there in your faggoty white uniform. He's like, you need men like me. You need men like me so you can sleep safely at night. And that is the reality that we've dulled down. We do need men like you to keep us doing the things we do.
We absolutely do. You know, I never take it for granted what our service member men and women do for our freedoms. I grew up in a military town, El Paso, Texas. There's a huge military installation there, Fort Bliss. I live in Colorado Springs now. We're surrounded by military installations here with Fort Carson and Schreiber Air Force Base and Peterson Air Force Base and the Air Force Academy and NORAD, the missile defense system. And so, you know, I see service members almost every single day, in addition to the veterans that I get to work with, you know, pleasure of working with at Wounded Warrior Project. And, you know, like I said, I'll repeat it. I never take it for granted that freedom comes at a price. You know, we are afforded liberties that were fought for.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we all got a little glimpse of how fragile the thing that we call society is during COVID, how fast it fell apart and how fast people started hoarding toilet paper. We got a glimpse of that.
Yeah, we sure did, man. You know, it was a crazy time. You know, going to the store and not seeing toilet paper or all other sorts of random things. You know, people were hoarding ammunition and just it was the weirdest thing to not see certain things on the shelves. But, you know, here again, I mean, when you're faced with some kind of looming disaster, you know, whether it's war or a pandemic, the nations tend to come together. You know, I think it does instill a sense of pride in people and doing right by one another. So I think the pandemic taught us a lot. It certainly has transformed business culture. It's transformed the way people behave in the world. And so I think despite the chaos, I think some good came out of it.
A few years ago, I saw a huge gap in the market for an app that was like a cycling coach, but in your pocket. I knew that AI was ultimately going to be the best coach in the world. And I spent about 2 years of my life trying to make this app happen. Unfortunately for me, it didn't happen. But ever since then, I've kept a really close eye on this space to see if anyone else could succeed where I failed. The Breakaway app caught my attention a couple of months ago because Christian Van de Velde, yep, the Christian Van de Velde who came fourth in the Tour de France, is one of the co-founders. And it seems that the Breakaway have created the ultimate cycling training companion, and they're bringing low-cost coaching to the masses. You'll know from listening to the podcast that my pet peeve is when cyclists head out the door with no plan, no goal, and just roll around without an objective. Don't be that guy! The Breakaway app looks at all your historic training data and it builds a plan around your strengths and weaknesses, so you're always going to have the perfect session. They also have integrations which I'm really excited about, Whoop and Oura Ring. The reason I've previously ditched my wearables is because the data just wasn't informing my training. No longer the case. Head on over to roadmantrial.com and you can download their app for free. That's roadmantrial, roadmantrial.com, and download the app for free. The link to this is in today's show notes.
My Wish is hands down the best virtual cycling app for home, and it's redefining indoor training at no cost. Yeah, it's completely free. And setting up My Wish is really easy. You just download the My Wish app, connect to your device like your Watt bike or your smart trainer, and off you go. If you're feeling competitive, there are weekly races for every category from beginner to pro. Plus, there's insane prize money up for grabs. And if you've no plans to race, that's no problem. There's hundreds of free training plans and workouts that are designed to push your limits. You can join daily group rides and group workouts, and you can customize your avatar, all without opening your wallet. So go on over to the My Wish app and have a look around. Why would you spend on monthly subscriptions elsewhere when My Wish offers all of this for free? So join My Wish today. It's available on iOS, macOS, Google Play, Apple TV, or you can click on the link in the show notes to get started.
What do you think with the kind of attack on masculinity that seems to be going on widespread across media at the moment? It's like, it's unpopular and it's uncool to be a masculine man now. A lot of the stuff that the military really stands for, it's masculinity, force, authority.
You know, it's certainly not my area of expertise. I like to believe, that our service members and our veterans, you need to have that duty and that honor, but there's a sense of physicality that comes with being a service member. I mean, there's physical tests that you have to complete to run, to push, to pull, all the different things that they're having our service members do to maintain a state of readiness. Our first responder community, police, fire, sheriffs, they all need to be physically fit and physically active to be able to do what they do. So I don't know if that gets to the root of the question about masculinity, but I do think there truly is a sense of being physically prepared, to engage in some of those occupations.
Have the standards got lower for physical requirements for entry since you were in active service?
I think the older generation always likes to assume that the younger generation has gotten softer. But, I know that the Army, at least, has changed their physical fitness test. It used to be push-ups, sit-ups, as many as you could do in 2 minutes, and then a two-mile run. That was it. And there were certain standards that were by age. Well, now they do more Army combat fitness test. It's much more of a CrossFit-style type physical test. And so there's many more moves that you've got to do with sandbags and more dynamic movements that are measuring a service member's state of readiness. So if anything, I would say that the fitness test has gotten harder since my days.
We talked at the start that we don't really have that much of an appreciation, at least here in Ireland or a lot of Europe, of what military service is on the upside with stuff like respect, chain of command, discipline. But we also don't get much of a glimpse into the downside either and why there's projects like yours are actually necessary. Talk to me about what's the impact of seeing combat on an individual. What does it do to somebody?
Well, you know, I truly think there's the range of impacts across individuals. And that really depends on that person's set of skills, resiliency, coping. But trauma is still trauma, you know, so it impacts everybody. And so we see our service members, coming back from deployments with post-traumatic stress, with challenges with sleep, with long-term service. They're dealing with chronic pain. Could be from jumping out of airplanes, could be from carrying a lot of heavy loads on their back or a lot of the things that they had to do during their service time, but they're dealing with pain. They're having to use prescription medication. Like I mentioned, they're dealing with sleep challenges because, you know, during conflict time, you're having to be on alert 24/7. You know, you could be cozying up and be 15 minutes into getting a nap, then all of a sudden it's time to go again. And so your body clock just recalibrates itself. You know, I like to think organizations like ours, Wounded Warrior Project, we're there for our service members because they do face a lifetime of potential challenges going forward. And so we offer things like our physical health and wellness program and adaptive sports, mental health type of training and skills to help them deal with some of these issues that they're having to deal with, you know, PTSD and depression and anxiety and stress.
Have we got a little bit better at acknowledging that I'm not okay, that it's okay not to be okay, that some of this stuff does take a toll and it's not a chink in my armor. I'm not less of a man to say, you know what, that affected me.
You know, I think there's always going to be a sense of bravado that goes along with being a service member and you know, maybe not being willing to admit that you're not okay. However, I will say that it has gotten much more normal to say that you're not okay, that you need help, that you need support, and you potentially need some of the life-saving and changing programs like Wounded Warrior Project has to offer. You know, you need counseling. You need to get physically active or stay physically active. Many service members, when they leave their duty time, you know, it's like I've been forced to be physically active for so long. Now I'm going to take a break. And so they realize over time after gaining weight and being inactive that they still need to move their bodies. That's incredibly important for their mental health. There's that mind-body connection that goes along with being physically active. And that's one of the reasons I love to introduce cycling to many of our wounded, ill, and injured service members. It's a low impact activity. They're not pounding on the body like they were during their service time.
Well, there's a saying with athletes that athletes die twice. They die the time they retire and then obviously their ultimate death. But I think the comparisons between military and athletes, there's quite a lot because we get to the end of an athletic career, especially a pro career, and you think, okay, I was super happy for that period of my life. Was I super happy because I was young? Or was I super happy because I was active, I was healthy, I was getting outside, I was having connection with friends? A lot of stuff that we can maintain post-retirement, but we draw this arbitrary line and we say, okay, now I'm retiring. A kind of an artificial construct that we've created where we say, now it's time to chill. And we've framed chill as time to get fat, be inactive, eat shit food, don't sleep well, drink beer, some, you know, narcotics, whatever people get into. But all of that is a pretty bad recipe for mental health problems.
You actually bring up an amazing point. And I've had the fortune to see both sides of that. You know, I was a professional coach for a long time. And so when my athletes, my Olympic athletes would retire, you know, you're talking about folks who were, you know, between 25 and 30 years of age, did their last professional race. And they immediately went into a huge sense of loss and depression. Taking off that uniform for the last time, it's like, well, what do I do now? You know, your life was revolving around the seasonality of sport. And, you know, it's off season, I do these things. And now it's preseason and I do these things. You've lost your team. You've lost your purpose. And so many times you're dealing with something that a 65, 70-year-old individual who's retiring from work much later in life, you're dealing with this in your 20s or your 30s. And so it's a huge sense of loss. And so I see the same thing with our service members. You know, they take off that uniform and it's like, well, wait a minute, what next? I had this, this patch, you know, this flag on my uniform, and I was part of something greater than myself. I had a purpose and I had a team and I was surrounded by my brothers and sisters and we all had a common goal. And so I actually did an interview with an old athlete of mine and with a couple of our service members who were sharing about that experience, kind of how it was almost identical. You know, athletes are not, thankfully, athletes are not getting shot at, but it's the exact same thing when you hang up that uniform for the last time. You know, it's a huge loss there.
Yeah, I spoke with David Gillick. He's the former European champion at 400 meters, and he was one of the favorites for the London Olympics. And in a training camp just before London, he tore his Achilles. And he spoke to me on the podcast about just knowing his career was over. He was too old to make a comeback for the next Olympic cycle. So he went into training that morning. Somebody, he had his uniform, he had his identity, he had his future mapped out. And then he woke up the next morning, he looked in the mirror and he said he didn't know what he's saying. He didn't recognize himself because he wasn't part of anything greater. He had no uniform to put on. He had no purpose in his day. And he said it was a profound sense of loss, almost similar to mourning, mourning a death of himself. And he felt totally directionless and fell into some quite bad mental health problems as a result.
Yeah, I ran into an athlete that used to live at the Olympic Training Center in the San Diego, California area at the same time I did. And she had won 2 gold medals. And I hadn't realized that when she retired, she went through a similar bout of depression. She actually started up a group of athletes, got together with a group of athletes and started almost a support group for retiring athletes. And she's getting her PhD in psychology to help athletes to get over this. You know, I think one of the great things that Wounded Warrior Project does to help our service members in this regard is we introduce adaptive sports. You know, all of a sudden when these individuals don't have that purpose and they retired from service, you introduce sport. And now again, they're part of a team. They can put on a uniform, you know, whether it's an individual sport or it's a team sport, but they've got a passion and a fire and they can train and they can gain skills and confidence and things like that. And so I think we find with channeling our veterans into adaptive sports, it sort of ignites that fire again, you know, gets them competitive and gets them surrounded by something that, again, they can be part of something greater than themselves.
It's like a bridge to life after sport, because there's no reason, if you're a soldier, that your physical activity needs to end the day you retire. There's no reason that that connection to your community needs to end. There's no reason your sense of identity needs to end, because if anything, having an identity as a veteran, it's something to be proud of. It's a strong identity. You've finished your service. So none of that needs to end. So I love this idea of using sport as a bridge between active service and life after service. But logistically, how does this work? So if somebody has just finished their final deployment, they're done with the military, how do they find their way into a project like yours where they can start leaning on these support structures?
Yeah, so there's certainly programs that the military has as you're transitioning out, introducing you to things like how to prepare a resume, how to get a job. You may have not ever had to do that before, you know, how to cook. There's soldier readiness units within the Army where that individual spends some time there developing skills for life after service. We thankfully have relationships with many of our military installations where we can come on and speak to service members who are going to transition so we can introduce them to all the great programs and services that Wounded Warrior Project has to offer, which are free of charge to our veterans. I mean, they paid their dues on the battlefield, so everything we do is free of charge. We have programs in financial well-being, in mental health, in physical health, and in social connection, so that they can be, again, surrounded by a community of individuals who know what they've been through. You know, they're all veterans. And so whatever that veteran needs at whatever time in life they need it, we're going to be there for them. I, of course, because I work on the physical health and wellness side, I make a big push for re-engaging in physical activity and how paramount that is to mental health. You know, I talked about that mind-body connection. I want to engage them in sport so that they can, if they have an injury, whatever that looks like, we can adapt the equipment and get them on a level playing field. But engaging in sport and moving their bodies on a day-to-day basis, you know, that you get the neurochemicals in the brain firing and things start to feel better. And then we talk to them about how is being physically active making you feel? Getting in to make that connection and understanding this is something I need to do and I need to continue to do for the rest of my life. You know, I listened to a number of podcasters in this particular genre about physical well-being, and it was amazing. I heard one of them say that VO2 max is still a huge predictor of longevity. So as we age, especially for our service members, as they can, you know, get out there and get physically active and improve their cardiac capacity, they are going to live longer and improve their quality of life.
I used to be a good friend of mine is visually impaired. He lost his eyesight when he was about 18. So I'd retired from full-time cycling, kind of given up my ambitions of trying to reach world tour level there. And I'd gone drinking and put on a bit of weight and stuff. And then he's like, hey, you want to come back and ride the front of the tandem for me? So I kind of got back into shape for him, started riding pursuits. We built up riding national championships, World Cups, eventually riding world championships together. But I got the glimpse behind the curtain at Parasport, and it's something really powerful because people of any disability you can imagine, from missing a finger to missing both arms and both legs, they have an outlet to compete. And it's really, really powerful. I hadn't quite realized how much you can adapt a bike, how adaptive these machines are. So that's why it does seem like an obvious choice to get somebody into cycling from military, especially if they've experienced physical trauma where they might have lost a limb, because you can come in and you can find your little niche for competition.
Absolutely. You know, we love to use the bike. And like you mentioned, like you can adapt bikes in a whole lot of different ways. We use hand cycles, you know, for those with spinal cord injuries. We use recumbent bikes for those that have back pain or they have some other kind of limitation. And then for our amputees, you can modify the prosthetics. You can modify the attachment points on the bike, whether that's the, you know, the pedals or the handlebars. I've seen the controls on bikes all on one side for, you know, someone who may be missing an arm. So we have a team that does that on all of our bikes. Whenever we get our veterans coming in and they've got a unique type of injury, we immediately make that adaptation to the bike and teach them, like, you can still do this. You can still get after it. Of course, our adaptive sports program introduces several other adaptive sports, being of ski and snowboard, sled hockey. We just had a clinic last week that was wheelchair rugby, which is, if you've never seen wheelchair rugby, I mean, you're in for a treat. I mean, it's pretty rough and tumble. They get after it, smashing into each other in the chair. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, we introduce a variety of adaptive sports that are, many are team oriented. Some are individual, some are very aggressive, and some require a little bit more zen, you know, like a cycling where you're working on your cardiovascular system and your power. But yeah, we love to introduce veterans to adaptive sports because it spark something in them that sometimes they haven't seen in a long, long time.
I think from the stats I've seen, your soldier ride is up over 2,000 vets a year, which is amazing. And these stats are really important, the width stats. But I actually think the one that's much more important, your better place to talk about, is the depth stats, like how much of an impact that connection can have on a single person. Have you seen how this connection to this community is transforming individuals?
Oh man, I could talk to you for hours about the different stories that I've heard. And sometimes we don't hear the story because a veteran doesn't share it with us. You know, so we know we're impacting lives that we've never heard about. But on one particular occasion, I met this veteran. He was an Air Force veteran, and he offered to give me a ride after the event. He offered to give me a ride to the airport, said he was going home and he was going that way. And I said, yeah, sure. You know, I jumped in his car, drops me off at the airport. And as we're about 10 minutes from the airport, he says, hey, I want to thank you. Wounded Warrior Project saved my life. And he starts telling me a story. He was actually sitting in his car under the interstate, had written goodbye letters, and had a pistol in his passenger seat. And he was ready to go. And he got a phone call from a Wounded Warrior Project teammate who invited him to an event. And he said, you know, thanks, I've got something going on. and I can't come. So he hung up. The individual that was on the Wounded Warrior Project team heard something in his voice and said, I need to call this guy back. So he calls him again, says, do me a favor. My boss is gonna kill me if I don't fill up this event. Please just come to this one event and then you can do whatever you have to do. So he comes to the event. From that event, we got him connected into a soldier ride and he went on a multi-day cycling event. He had ridden a bike since he was 9 years old. And so as he's telling me this, I've got, you know, tears coming down my face. And he said that that soldier ride just completely transformed his life. Didn't know he could be physically active again because of his chronic pain in his back. He didn't know that he could move like that and have that sense of purpose. And he was surrounded by other veterans, his brothers and sisters. And so they laughed, they talked, they shared stories about their service time. You know, come the end of the event on day four, like nobody wants to leave. It's like the end of summer camp as kids. You know, everybody's hugging and, you know, exchanging phone numbers. And so as I got out of the car, I had been at Wounded Warrior Project for about a year at that point. And it was such a powerful story. I've carried it with me for the last 9 years that I've been with the organization. But I remember that story every day because it reminds me that that event for that veteran, you know, right time and place, and you're going to change that veteran's life. Not only his life, but sorry, getting a little choked up. He invited me to his retirement ceremony from the Air Force, which was during COVID, actually, so I couldn't physically attend, but I watched the retirement ceremony. He did 23 years in the Air Force, but he's got kids and he's got a wife. And so not only did it save his life, but, you know, it saved a father and a husband, you know, with his family. And so I think about those stories and how impactful they can be and some of the events and the services that Wounded Warrior Project has to offer, you know, and it's potentially going to change a service member for their lifetime.
James, thanks for sharing so openly. And it's an amazing project. So best of luck with running this going forward.
I appreciate you having me and letting me talk about the story.